Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Puck Talk Live podcast. My name is Logan Rosengard. With me on the call, as always, we've got Rafi Sarafian and we got Noah Foster. It's another Thursday night here for the Puck Talk Live boys in Illinois, Wisconsin, and Kansas. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well, I can say for sure that I would much rather talk hockey than do a math test. So I'm happy to be here and not be taking a math test right now.
No, believe me, I get it. I just finished doing some accounting work, some accounting class work, because I'm in an accounting class as a journalism major.
Crazy how that works. You do accounting work for an accounting class.
But yeah, like it's not like I'm doing like crazy math. I'm not doing like logarithms or anything. It's just tedious and accounting books are stupid, but necessary.
True.
So, Rafi, how about you? How's it going with ye old falafel?
You know what? I've been thinking a lot, and this is probably the best time to be a Blackhawks fan. You think about it. The Blackhawks have low expectations going into the season. All of a sudden, they're fighting for a playoff spot and could realistically get that playoff spot. You have the LA Kings, your old rival, like kind of good, but not really good. The St. Louis Blues have lost 4 of their last 5. You have the Anaheim Ducks, who are at the bottom of the league and can't score a goal for their life. You have Canucks are about to go back-to-back rebuilds. Get ready for it. They're going back-to-back in something, just like their President's Trophy in 2010 and 2011, where they also didn't win back-to-back cups. And then the Bruins fan of me, too, is, like, great, too. The Bruins are doing great, as always, as expected, not missing a step with losing Krug. And Toronto is a joke. It's amazing.
Well, I wouldn't say Toronto is a
joke. And to top it off, and this can also be a bit of a lead into what we might be talking about today, the Predators have been abysmal. And Detroit has been abysmal, too. Everything's working out if you're a Blackhawks fan right now. It's hard to complain with if being a Blackhawks fan right now.
Yeah,
that is very true, actually.
I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining that we're relevant and competing and that our prospects that were expected to pan out in a year or two are panning out a little earlier. Like, I'm not complaining.
Oh, no. Don't flash all your talent too early. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Dang, Calvin Lincoln in.
Here's the thing, though. I'm really hoping this doesn't turn into one of those things. I know this is the Blackhawks fan in me talking. This is like the tried and true historic Blackhawks fan in me. I don't want all these guys to want a lot of money. Then we're going to have to trade them away. And not that we can't get assets back for them. Because, you know,
Brandon Saad, return tour. Yes.
Proper management suggests that, like, oh, you know, you can't give everyone all the money they want. But I'm afraid that that's going to happen and we're going to be in a cap crunch with a bunch of good players and kind of be like Tampa, but in a bad way. That's my only fear. But that's also not a bad thing to have a problem with because, like I said, they're tradable assets. It's not like you've got 20 Brent Seabrooks on your books. You've got guys that are expendable and usable.
I think the big key part,
bring
though,
big returns.
The big key part, though, is if you look at the Blackhawks salary cap table, obviously, it's a bit scary that we're getting this old, but Kane and Taze only have 2 years left after this year on their contract, and then you also, and Keith as well, and then Seabrook is up the next year, so expect a lot, and we already saw this with, I believe, the Kubalik signing and the Strome signing, and the DeBrincat signing especially, where the contracts are all leading up to where there's going to be a ton of cap space, so you're going to see a lot of bridge deals with this team for the next season or two. And then once those deals expire, and likely Kane's going to get like around what he's making, which is perfectly fine. Taze probably will take a bit less. And then we don't know what's happening with Keith by then. There should be enough money to go around still, in my opinion, to all these guys who are going to want a bit more of a raise. And the big thing is instilling kind of what Boston has. I know you guys hear me talk about this like at least once a month, how Boston's managing their contract amazingly and how all their players buy in are always willing to take pay cuts. The Blackhawks need to instill that among their team as well. And if they're able to do that, oh boy, Oh boy. Just show them the three cups that they won at the start of the 2010s. A lot of people took discounts. A lot of people took pay cuts. That's why we lost the players at the end. But the three cups, and I think that will be a big standout for those players who are going to want to raise but are willing to take a bit less to stay home in Chicago.
Yep. Into our main topics for today. What?
I want to touch on one thing real quick.
Go for it.
Claude Julien's gone.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah, I was going to do that. But yes. Claude Julien has been told, has been canned. He got packed in a can and sent home from Canada.
It's kind of a lot like the Q firing a few seasons back in Chicago, right? This isn't, you know, Quinville is not a bad coach. He's like the second most winningest coach in NHL history. Claude Julien is not a bad coach. That Mark Bergevin came out and said that it's not because he was a poor coach, right? It's not like he stinks at his job. He doesn't stink at his job. He just lost touch of the room because he's been there for a while. Like, there's nothing wrong. You need every good team, every properly rebuilt team needs a new face behind the bench. And that's exactly what Bergevin did. Right? Like, you look at this team. This might be the same physical team as last year. You've got a lot of the similar guys that you had on last season's roster. But what you don't have is the same type of team. You don't have the same mesh of players. You don't have the same mentality this season as you did last season. And because of that, yes, they got off to a hot start, but they've kind of trailed off, if you haven't noticed. They aren't the Montreal Canadiens of earlier in this season. And I think getting rid of the coach and getting a new, you know, set of eyes on this roster, I think is going to do wonders for this team. I think they're going nowhere but up.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think also is coming with the fact that a lot of the line moves he was making, the general management didn't really agree with. And if you look at Montreal, obviously you have Deneau who's going to be a UFA. You have Tatar who's going to be a UFA. You have some pretty like solid pieces, which are, I guess, expendable, but you still wouldn't like to lose them. So those are guys that if they're not having a good time and they're leaning more towards not signing an extension, you kind of want to give them some more ice time so they can prove themselves. And then I'll let Noah, you can touch on something as well. And I think we noticed this with Quenneville in Chicago, where the coach grows a bit too close to the veterans. And it becomes harder and harder to be stern on them, move them down, give them less ice time. And I feel like, as you mentioned, Logan, sometimes it's just good to get a new face in someone who's a bit more, they may be a bit more unfamiliar with the players, but that can also be a good thing in the sense that they don't feel an attachment or they don't feel a requirement or a need to always put them on the first line, expecting they're going to be really good and just having that ability to do so. Noah.
Yeah, real quick before we move on to our main topic tonight, I think 100% agree with what Logan said. It's exactly like the Q firing the Blackhawks a while ago. That it's just something to shake up the locker room. It's something to shake up, you know, kind of wake the players up, saying, you know, everyone's movable. You know, people are constantly being scrutinized, and if you're not doing your job and you're not performing up to standards, you're gonna pay the price, pay the consequences, exactly. Whatever.
And look at Quinville in Florida right now. He's killing it, right? That they're like a top team in the league, top team in the Central Division. Yep. There's no reason that Claude Julien, look at this coaching market that Ron Francis has to pick from before next season for the puck drop for the Seattle Kraken. Like, there's the potential that if Don Waddell messes up his job of re-signing Rod Brind'Amour this offseason, he could have his coach there, right? Which would make sense. Ron Francis and Brind'Amour have that connection. Claude Julien now is in the mix. You've got Gerard Gallant
Bruce
in the
Bordeaux.
Mix. Boudreaux, yep. I don't like Boudreaux that much, but
he's still
an option.
A known name.
Right? There are a bazillion guys, you know, that it. Claude Julien will be fine. He will have a job soon. And if he doesn't, he had a hell of a career, but I expect him to have a job in some capacity. Yeah, and I genuinely wouldn't doubt if he was the guy that Ron Francis made a phone call to as the season, as next season gets closer. Hey, I kind of got a head coach, or I got a coaching job vacancy on the bench. What are your thoughts, right? He would be a guy that I would call if I were Ron Francis.
And that's like the first thing you need to before you – obviously, they've been doing a lot of expansion mock drafts, as we've been hearing, how they've been thinking about any possibility, any given name that's available by any team. But a big part of that, too, is first you need to find a coach, because then they're going to outline, I want to run this system, I want to run these plays. And then you can start finding those pieces that will be more complementary towards that coach's style of play. So the coach is very important. They should probably look into hiring one soon. Noah?
So last thing before we move on is that while the Seattle coaching option is available right now, there are plenty of teams in the league right now that would pay a price that would pay a good price for someone like Julian. And as we said before, Julian is still a very capable coach. He's still a very good coach. I think one of the teams that could potentially make a run for him if they want to turn their team around is the Nashville Predators. And that team is the team that we're going to be focusing on today. We're not going to be doing this for every team because that's a lot of episodes and we don't really have that kind of time. We got to keep things moving, keep things fresh. But we're going to focus on Nashville because people didn't really think they'd be that good this year, but we didn't think they'd be this bad. So Nashville's coaching is not great, right? John Hines is not the coach that you want in Nashville in the process of leading a team in a rebuild, retool, not sucking, whatever you want to call it. John Hines is not really the guy that you want in the bench boss, but it doesn't just come from the coach. Is John Hines a good coach for Nashville? No. Is he a good coach in the league? Not really. He wasn't great with New Jersey either. But it starts with the players, obviously. They're the ones in the ice scoring goals. But I think Hines has to go soon-ish if Nashville starts getting any better, because I don't think he can handle a team that's doing really well.
I mean, I'm going to cut you off real quick here, Noah. Even though you stopped talking, so I'm not really cutting you off, but I'm going to stop you right there, Foster. Currently, so last season when Nashville canned Laviolette and brought in Hines, he coached 28 games. He went 16-11-1, which is good. That's not bad. I mean, that's actually playoff potential. Look at him this season. I really don't think it's him. Like, I really do not want to put too much blame on John Hines for the way this team is performing. I think it is a deeper, might be a system thing. It very well could be. But they've had the problems that Nashville has had the last two or three seasons are the same ones that they're having this season. So I don't think it's the coach.
I don't think that all of the problems will be solved in Nashville by firing Hines. I think a small one could be solved, but as we'll get into later, you're right. Their problems are much worse than a bad coach.
It goes higher up the ladder in the front office than Mr. Hines.
I don't think it
really goes all the way up to Poyle.
I don't think their GM is very good either, but I think we can discuss that towards the end. I think what we need to do actually is start at the very bottom with the players, right? And Nashville's performance this season from just about every single spot on the ice has been awful. Rafi, why don't you start us off by talking about the defense and their penalty kill? That's not great, to put it nicely.
Yeah, and I mean, the Predators would be really good at getting pucks in the net and out of the net. if it wasn't the fact that most of the time they're getting the puck out of their own net because they just allowed a goal. They will get into more special teams with the power play specifically, but just highlight the penalty kill, which is more defensive. They have the second worst penalty kill in the league at just under 69%, which is really not nice for a penalty kill. And you think about Nashville over the past few years, and you think of this defensive team. You have a bunch of guys who are the backbones of the defense, led by Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, just to name a few guys. And you just have a good core of defenders, even PK Subban when he was around too in Nashville, that were able to defend the puck and be put in any situation. And you had guys who can win faceoffs. And this season, although they're winning a solid amount of draws, I don't really have a stat that's showing that can show and provide evidence for this, but they're likely not winning too many draws when they're defending on the penalty kill, which I think is probably a huge thing. And you also have to look at the fact that they're giving up 2% more high danger chances than the league average. And obviously, the more high danger chances you're giving, the more likely you are to allow a goal. And that's just common sense right there. And hopefully Nashville can start piecing it together again. It's just weird, though, because they were that defense was their game. They're kind of like the Islanders, where they played a bit more of a boring style of hockey, but it was really successful. But now you're looking at guys like Benning, Josi, Ellis. They're some of their premier defensemen. Obviously, Benning isn't, but I'll go on. They all have like -4, -5. Ekholm has a -1. Most of the guys are on the ice and have a negative plus minus than people with a positive. I think the highest guy on the Predators right now is a plus, I believe it was a +1, right? +2, Logan, I apologize. Yarncroak.
Kyle Yarncroak. It's okay. I like Kyle Yarncroak, actually. I think he's a great depth piece. I love him. But
yeah, him and Brad Richardson are the only two guys with a plus-minus, a +2. And a fun fact, too, Matt Duchene, their big free agency acquisition from, I believe, a year or two out now, 2 years out.
Last, not the most recent offseason, but the offseason before that. So the offseason going into 1920.
-10, plus minus.
That's
you cannot
that's,
have that from a guy playing on your first line. And Logan will touch on the offense in a sec, but all around defense has just been brutal.
I will say real quick, to correct you on one slight thing, Nashville's opponents are converting on 2%. More of high danger chances than the league average, which is even worse than the stat that Rafi gave.
Yeah, so I mean, not to pour more salt into the wound, but thank you, Noah.
Yeah, Nashville is giving up a lot of high danger chances, and they're not clearing the pucks out in front of their net, and they're not protecting Saros or Rene enough, and not giving them enough breathing room to, you know, actually make the easy saves that they should be making. But while we're on the topic of Saros and Rene, I want to talk about the goalies real quick before we get into the major, major, major problems that is their offense. UC Saros, the guy that was supposed to take over for Pekka Rene after he got old and starting to fall off. Granted, I say that like he's not 38 right now, but, you know, it is what it is.
He has better stats than UC Saros. Yeah, not by much. Not by too much. I don't want to go saying that Pekka Rinne's back. He's back to his Vezina form. God, no. That's not at all what I'm saying. But it for the guy that is being billed and was signed and was expected to be the de facto starter, and he kind of still is, this season aside, it's a weird season. I don't really want to talk too much about... I will, actually. It's a weird season. But all that aside,
he's the starting goaltender with a .882 save percentage and a
3.0-something goals allowed. Like,
nope. 3.4 now goals allowed. It's worse.
So,
I mean, the thing
point,
is, though...
At what point does... Is it on the team in front of us, in front of them's fault? But, I don't think it's their defense because I know they're giving up a lot of high danger chances, but like I really don't think it's 100% like that. It's not like the Blackhawks last season where Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford were literally willing into existence a win or two or however many wins they got last season. Right?
I mean, I agree with you. Yeah.
This isn't like the tandem of Robin Lehner and Corey. Sorry, I cut you off, but Robin Lehner and Corey Crawford, where they are the, you know, there are numbers to back up that the two of them are a top five tandem and two of them are top 10 individual goalies. That is not the case. They are not stopping high danger chances. They are not doing, they are not as productive as they need to be to make up for the deficit that their defense and team in front of them is forcing there to be. Profit.
I will say, is Robin Lehner, are Robin Lehner and last year Corey Crawford better than UC Saros and Pecorine this year? Yes, 100%. But should UC Saros and Pecorine be playing better? 100%. Is it on their team? Sure. But is it partly on their team? Sure. But they have not been playing well when they've being expected to play well. You can't have your starting goaltender 3-5 and a .882 save percentage. That's ridiculously low. You can't win games like that.
Honestly, Logan brought up a good point though, that it's not too much on the defense. I mean, you look at their offseason moves and trades, and there's really been no movement. No big losses on defense that I've been able to see, really, for Nashville's back end. So it wasn't like they lost a guy, a solid glue or a solid back end guy that really helped them on the defensive, more of a defensive defenseman per se. They didn't really lose anyone like that. So I kind of can agree with Logan on this one. And I mean, you look at Saros the last few seasons, though, and as his games that he started rose, it appeared that his numbers seemingly got worse, which kind of makes sense, but we all forgot last season he was expected going to this season rather he was expected to take the keys and become the full-time starter, and he proved it last year that he was able to do that. He started 40 games, 17-12, 4 overtime losses, and he had a .914 save percentage and a 2.7 goals allowed average. And I have to assume that Saros will bounce back at some point out of this season or even next season, because this just isn't like him from what we've seen, at least what I've seen in the past, just from a statistical viewpoint.
Yeah, and now UC Saros is one of the worst goalies in the league this season, right? Yep. He is down at the bottom of the save percentage above expected list. He is the fifth worst in between Thomas Greiss and Tristan Jarry. And in the likes of the elite Martin Jones, Matt Murray, and Marcus, right? Like, this isn't what you want out of your franchise goalie, per se. And he's a restricted free agent. It wouldn't faze me if they traded him off and, you know, found someone else to replace Pecorine if he retires, do something else with Pecorine, and let Askarov take reign of the net. That wouldn't shock.
I think it's too early for Askarov to do that. Yeah, but I'd like to say though,
this isn't how you want your goalie playing. Is this 100%.
I just want to point out though that entering next offseason, and we'll talk a bit about the future of the team, and right after we talk about their offense, and there's a lot of good goalies on the market. Obviously, you have Rask, you have guys like Rask, you have guys like Binnington, but you also have like guys who can also play like either 50-50 or even a bit more. You have Frederick Anderson, who I know Noah doesn't like too much. I still think Antti Raanta would be a really good guy for Nashville.
Yep.
Binnington, as I mentioned already. I'm still holding on to the little sliver of hope that Devan Dubnyk somehow turns it around. I don't think that's happening.
Nope.
But there's definitely some goaltending options for Nashville to look into. But it just so happens they're investing a ton of money into offense. And
it's
if someone wants to take
off.
It,
does isn't anyone, paying off.
Someone run with that, yeah.
Like, I loved past tense Erik Haula. I loved past tense Luke Cunnan. I actually still like Luke Cunnan. I think he's awesome. And he's 23, but I'm not going to get into prospect development too much. I want to talk about players and their performance specifically with this offense. Their current lead scorer right now is Philip Forsberg with 17 points in 18 games. That's actually kind of good. He's at goals and 8 assists. That's exactly what you want. And then your next best scoring player is a defenseman, which is fine. It's Roman Josi. He's expected to do that. But let's look at the rest of the offense. When you are 9 points or more away from your next best scoring forward, that being Michael Granlund, surprisingly, with second of forwards with 8 points in 15 games, 3 goals, 5 assists, that is not great, right? Michael Granlund is not a first-line centerman. And this is what Cap Friendly has. I know he doesn't play the first line, but he you know, Matt Duchene, who should be getting those minutes, isn't, but should be getting those first line minutes, also at 8 points. But that's not comparable. Matt Duchene and Michael Granlund are not comparable. Matt Duchene should be blowing him out of the water in terms of offensive production. Now let's look at their other, you know, top guy, Ryan Johansson. 4 points. 4 assists. He's a playmaker. I'm not saying he's a goal scorer, but 4 assists in 11 games, it's not bad. It's not a bad pace. I don't
4 points. 4 points in 11 games for a guy that you're expecting to not like carry your offense, but like
he's a 50 to 70 point scorer in a full season. Should be a 50 to 70 point scorer. And he isn't. I really don't know what's wrong with individually. This offense is great. Ryan Johansson, Erik Haula, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene. They've got some really good complementary pieces with Colton Sissons. They've got Nick Cousins, who's been playing really well. Eli Tolvanen, who's actually playing decently this season. Not as offensively elite as he's projected to be or has projected to play. But the complements are there. But they aren't playing well together, and that's a system thing. But Patrick Kane, you throw Patrick Kane in this team, he's still putting up the same points. You throw Connor McDavid in here, he's still putting up the same points. You put, let's talk about someone less offensively lethal. You put
Joe Pavelski. Sure.
Joe Pavelski? Sure. You put Logan Couture. I think he's performing the same as he would in San Jose.
Yeah.
You throw in Clayton Keller. You throw in Mitch Marner. They're still performing at the level that they would be performing on the teams they currently are on. What's wrong with this? What's wrong with this offense? It's a mix of a system.
It's a lot to do with the system.
Yeah.
I think you're.
My problem with the team, and then I'll throw it to you, Noah, is the fact that they threw out two huge contracts. I believe both were 8 for 8, and both to Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. And for some reason, in Space Jam-like ways, right when they signed the contract, all of a sudden, all their ability to produce offense just, like, disappeared. I don't know who captured their offense, but whoever did, please return it to them. Or actually, maybe don't. I'm a Blackhawks fan. But for the greater good of the Nashville Predators, you got to return it to them, honestly. Like, this is – you've had your fun the last 2 years. Come on. It's just – the thing was, when they traded for Ryan Johansson, everyone, and especially Nashville fans, were like, all right, we finally got that one-line center that we've been looking for. We finally filled that piece. We're going to be great now. And they were solid when he started. I don't know if he was on the team when they made it to the Cup Final. I think he was. And then he starts to slow off. Then you kind of play him on the wing. You try figuring things out. And then 2 off-seasons ago, oh, Matt Duchene, he loves country music. Perfect fit. Hometown guy. He's going to love it here. This is the first line center we need. And then we can figure out Johansson's spot because he's not playing too well. They signed Duchene to an 8-to-8. He's not doing anything now. And it's just, you got to feel bad for the general manager, David Poehl, because it's not like he's trying to tank this team. He's making good moves. But yeah, Logan, the system's just been not working for them. They're not meshing. There's no chemistry on that team. No.
I think.
Go ahead.
I don't know what I think, to be honest. Like, I want this team to do well. Like, they have the pieces for this team to do well. They have the name depth, but the depth isn't performing how it needs to. There's no true complement to any one player, which stinks, right? Roman Josi doesn't have – actually, I'm not going to talk about the defensive aspect because they all complement each other pretty well. I think Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis complement each other really well. I think Dante Fabro complements, you know, whoever he's going to be playing with, Mark Borwicki, really well. But look at the offense. I don't think Philip Forsberg – and Victor Arvidsson are complementing each other really well. Like, I think the two of them together are great. But you throw Rocco Grimaldi next to Matt Duchene, as Cap Friendly has it, that's not a comparable complement. You don't have a true other top, you know, guy on the right side in the top six to be playmaker. They don't have the – they have the scorers. They don't have the playmakers. They have the playmakers. They don't have the scorers. They don't have enough of each type of player. They have a lot of checking scoring forwards, right? They have a lot of guys like Eric Howla on the team that can score and that can throw their weight around and have been around and know what they're doing. They don't have a lot of guys that are purely playmakers. They don't have a guy like, I don't know, let's say they don't have a guy like Nick Ritchie this season. They don't have that on the team. They don't have a guy that is able to be that playmaker on the third line. Truly a playmaker on the third line. That's what we're missing. That's an off-season thing. It's an off-season development thing. They aren't going to get it at the deadline because they aren't going to make a bazillion trades and instantly be better. Sure, they're going to compete for that fourth spot in the Central, I think. I just think they have the capacity to do that. I don't know, though. Like, they need a lot more than one or two guys to fix this roster. They need a whole set of playmakers, scorers, checking forwards, grinders, power forwards. They need the whole shebang, and they don't have that right now.
I think we talked about it. GM and their whole team as a whole, their team as a whole is in kind of a rough spot. I think the system is really difficult, and it's tough to have a lot of guys mesh with each other. But I think actually one of the biggest things is that the Predators rely on a few guys for most of their scoring, right? Like Forsberg, Duchene, Josi, Ryan Ellis, Arvidsson, right? Like only a few guys for their scoring. And that's, you know what, that's fine, right?
That's okay, though.
That's okay.
There's nothing wrong with relying on a few guys. But
the problem is that, let's say I'm gonna use the Hawks as an example, right? Take Kane out of the equation. Most of your, like, Doc and Taze are out, and those are two big offensive guys, right? Thing is, younger guys have stepped up in their place. Nashville, there is none of that. Their big guys don't produce. Nobody produces. Kind of like what we talk about the Flames, right? And that's really, but it's like night in and night out. Nobody is producing for Nashville. Except if their big guys have one good game, one or two good games, then they win a game, right? But if they don't, if they have an off day, okay, fine, whatever, happens. You have an off day, no big deal. Happens to every player, happens to the best. But you need to have depth, you need to have other pieces or more star players that can help you out. And Nashville has none of those.
And the worst thing, and then we'll go on to the future, is they're losing games that they should be winning. Like, they've blown a few games. They're down to Detroit right now. They already lost to Detroit once or twice this season. They barely made it out of Detroit a few nights ago by the skin of their teeth. They're just blowing games that they should be winning. And they're also, like, those points, especially when you're playing in your division against a few teams, is so important. And as Blackhawks fans, we all can agree right now, every point matters in this division. You obviously have the Hurricanes and Tampa Bay, who are definitely going to be your top two. The Florida Panthers seem to be that third team right now, barring a massive Montreal Canadiens-style collapse. That leaves Columbus, Chicago, Dallas, and Nashville as your four teams all competing for that last spot. I'm sorry, Detroit fans, not happening. And if you're constantly losing and giving up games to teams like Columbus, and although they beat Chicago, we'll see what happens next time they play them again, and that you're losing to the Red Wings, which it should be an easy, you should be getting, if you're playing them and there's a possible 8 points, you should be getting 7-6 of those 8 points, and you're only getting 4-5 of those points, and you don't look like you're really trying on the ice. That's a hard problem to fix by bringing in one specific player or signing another massive player in free agency. Noah.
Let's move on after we've actually roasted the living daylights out of the entire, literally the entire team. Let's move on to future. And this will be the, kind of like our last topic. Where are the Nashville Predators headed? Not just this season. This season, future outlook, bad. That's this season. That's their future outlook. But
I think it's bad. Like
I do. Oh, I do too.
They're trending to a San Jose Sharks bad future, in all honesty.
I don't know, aside from Askarov, who, like, you know, and future draft picks that they get, but they really don't have many really strong prospects. They got Igor Afanasyev, who I really like, from Russia.
Phil Tomasino is going to come up probably in a season or two. He's a solid. He could be middle six guy for sure. You have him too.
That, I don't know. Like, Yaroslav Halak's a given. Not Yaroslav Halak. Yaroslav Askarov's a given.
There you go.
That's it. They got the Askarov. The
problem isn't really goaltending, though, because Saros can bounce back, or they could trade him if he doesn't,
I'm not
right?
saying that. I'm talking in general. Like, but that's it, right? No one else really stands out from their prospect pool. They don't have any guys that really boom when you see their name on a list. And that is where I think I think that's where there's a silver lining in all of this. At the very least, they're getting top draft picks. Whether or not they pan out is one thing, but like this year's draft, unless they get like a top five, top seven draft pick this year, the first round pick draft pick is going to be just like a mediocre first round draft pick. As of right now, I could be wrong. I want to be proven wrong by every one of those guys that are going to be drafted this year. But like in the future, right, in the 22, 23, 24 drafts, oh, those are going to be great. Like
2022 is going to have a ton of franchise guys.
They are, I think in the long run, they'll be fine. Like every team is going to have ebbs and flows, right? It's how hockey works. It's how the salary cap is supposed to work. It's how parity in a league is supposed to work. But in terms of the next 5 years, I think they're going to be a very mediocre team. I think they're a middle of the pack. It's a bottom tier team, somewhere between 20 and bottom in the league every season until they really figure it out. Well, I think they're four seasons away like, from being really good again.
I mean, their big problem, though, and if you look at, obviously, I mentioned already, Johansson and Duchesne both having, I know Johansson has 4 more years at $8 million after the season, and then Duchesne has 5 more years at $8 million. And then you obviously have Yossi, who's signed to an, I believe, $9 million contract for the next 8 years. I believe it's 8 years. And then you have Ryan Ellis, who signed a 6.25x7, I think, last offseason. So I think there's 6 more years left of that, or 5 more years, somewhere around that range. And he's 30 years old. You have some big contracts, too. And when you're looking to do some more retooling, or I think Nashville honestly should look into rebuilding at this point. It's hard to go into a flat-out rebuild when you have contracts, and obviously Roman Yossi, not an anchor contract. That's a great contract that he signed to for now. But the other guys, I mean, Ryan Ellis, I get it, but that's going to be an anchor contract as time goes on. Johansson and Duchesne kind of make it, unless they just somehow turn it around, find a magic potion, get back into their primes when they're with Ottawa, when they're with Columbus, that's going to be you're not going to be able to get rid of those contracts. And I'm looking at the team now, and is it possible Phil Forsberg wants out? Maybe. Do they try trading Phil Forsberg? I think it's on the table. I don't think they do.
We already saw that they have like two untouchables, I'm pretty sure. Roman Yossi. And I think that's honestly it. And I think Johansson might be the other untouchable.
I don't think Johansson would be the untouchable. I think maybe it was Forsberg, but I think they'd be willing to trade Forsberg, though, if the offer is right. And again,
is really their only untouchable.
Yeah.
Like, this team is due for getting totally torn down and being bad for two seasons, being mediocre for another two, and then busting in on year five and just absolutely murdering the league. Like, that's the type of development I think this team has right now.
I think you might be overestimating it a little bit. I think that they are not going to, I think that the longer they wait right now, the worse it's going to get for them, because you got your guys that are,
if they tear it down now,
yeah,
this all
you have to,
if they offload whoever they want to offload and they completely strip the franchise, get rid of David Poyle, get rid of John Hines, maybe you hire Claude Julien, maybe you hire Gerard Gallant, whoever it is. You build around Victor Arvidsson. I don't know. You build
just for the fact he has 3 more years on his contract, so $4 million. And we're in a flat cap era right now.
You find your guys that you're going to move, pick a guy you're going to build around, and run with it. And I think you do that this offseason, because if you don't know where you're right, the more time they spend trying to retool year after year and likely be mediocre season after season, it's just going to get worse and worse for them.
I mean,
their cup window's gone. They don't have a cup window anymore.
Oh, 100%.
They don't have a playoffs window anymore.
And you look at the team, and
they got to just pull the plug, and I really think tear it down, right?
And you look at their draft picks. For a team that's rebuilding, we've all obviously seen Ottawa the last few seasons. We've seen Detroit racking up draft picks. The next 3 seasons, these are natural amount of draft picks. They have 7 2-4ths and not a 7th this upcoming draft. They have 6 the following, the 2022 draft, missing a 6th. And then 2023, they have their own pick in each round. So if we're all on the same page here and we're all thinking the same thing, you're hearing any offers on Mikael Granlund for sure. You're looking in on any offer on a guy like Yarncrow, Grimaldi, Kunin. You're looking at Ekholm especially. I've been hearing a lot about as well. Any guy that could fetch you a 2nd, 3rd, 4th, even a 4th round pick, you have to take that. You need the draft picks. You need to build draft capital now. And these guys, if you don't trade them now, I don't see why they'd want to come back, looking at the situation that the franchise is heading in.
Basically, here's the outlook for the Nashville Predators right now. Your goaltending, you better hope Saros bounces back. Defense,
He's 25. Okay. Just want to point that out too.
Offense, you need depth. Coaching, maybe you keep Hines if you're risky. You probably fire him sooner or at the end of the season. GM, you might want to get rid of him too. Outlook for like the next 5 years, if you don't rebuild like now and you delay and keep delaying and you let your players get older and older and older with those same bad contracts, good luck, Charlie. You're going to be in the dump. You're going to be in the gutter for like 7 years trying to get rid of all of the contracts and trying to get draft picks and it's going to be a mess if the Predators don't start doing something now.
That about wraps it up for this episode of the Puck Talk Live podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. What do you guys think about the Nashville Predators? How do you Predators fans chime in? Let us know if we're just talking out of our butts or if we're actually got some merit to what we're saying. How do you guys feel about the state of the team? Do you think David Poyle's got to go? Do you think it's more of a player thing and not a system and management thing? Do you think it's a little bit of both? Do you think they should be moved to, like, I don't know, New Orleans? Who knows? Let us know in the comments of our posts. Let us talk to us, interact with us. We always love talking to you guys. We love talking hockey. Once again, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at PuckTalkLivePodcast. Click the Linktree link in our bio to find all of our socials and all of the podcast platforms. Best bets coming out soon. Keep liking those picks and predictions that we put out every day in the memes. Once again, my name is Logan Rosengard. We appreciate everything you guys do for the show, and we will see you guys next week. Have a good one.